What's up, everyone? Welcome to Laying the Points, the Monday reaction show where I discuss and analyze the past week's games from a betting perspective. We look at football from a psychosocial mindset, analyzing not just what happened, but why it happened, following every weekend of action. If you've listened to any of my shows in the past, I have a very unique approach that you won't hear from other betting shows out there, that's for sure, and it's worked well for me. We're introducing a new concept to the show today, too, where we will identify thesis statements on every game to contextualize and give a synopsis of what we learned, or the most important thing that we learned from week three, in this case. My name is Chris Farley, professional NFL bettor and contest winner. Follow me at FarleyBets on X, and you can subscribe to receive all of my plays via FarleyBets.substack.com. Just go over there to Substack, search for me under FarleyBets, or you can enter that direct URL. Week three so far, 5-3, plus 6 units, with 2 plays that I love remaining for Monday Night Football. A little bad beat here and there, like the 49ers, I had the -1.5. They won by 1. They had a safety that wasn't called. Arizona gets a safety, kind of annoying. The Giants last night, pretty annoying. Multiple chances at the red zone. Could have been a 7-1 weekend. As usual, we don't really get a lot of benefits on our side as far as good beats go. I think there's one where we can count as a good beat that we'll get to. But, you know, one of these weeks we're not going to have a loss, and I can't wait for that to happen. That happened multiple times last season. And we are back on the mend, just like we predicted. Calm down. Relax. First 2 weeks were clunky. They have been for me the past few years, but not week three. And I love where we are at this point in the season, just our understanding of these teams, right? Because at this point, although we're not there yet, we are much closer to knowing who these teams are now. It's an exciting time of year, right? Because things are starting to materialize, crystallize about these programs. It also doesn't mean still that every 3-0 team rules and every 0-3 team sucks. There's always some gray in the middle there. We're going to get to that on today's show, too. Full week three recap, and we'll go over week four look-ahead lines and thoughts at the end of this podcast. As always, we try to keep it around 30 minutes or less, so let's get to it. The Indianapolis Colts visited the Tennessee Titans. My thesis statement on this game is you can't make mistakes against the Indianapolis Colts because they will come around to bite you in the ass. And Shane Steichen's coaching acumen is becoming more clear. He's good. This is just year three, and already on both sides of the ball, they got guys, they make plays, and they don't make mistakes. 0 turnovers so far this season for Indianapolis, and one of the least penalized teams last season, kind of average this year, but I expect that to positively regress, because I think this is just a well-oiled machine. It's a well-run operation, and here we go again. Daniel Jones getting a lot of love from NFL media, as he should. First quarterback, I think, in NFL history through 3 weeks. 3 rushing touchdowns, 3 passing touchdowns, and 0 turnovers. Another indictment about Brian Daboll and that operation over there for the New York Giants. Because Daniel Jones wasn't doing anything over there. But interesting what a quarterback can do when they have protection. He has great protection. Of course, I think this is a different game a little bit if Cam Ward doesn't throw that immediate interception. Like, you know, the Titans were ready to go in this one, brought some good energy, like stayed in the game early. But when you throw a pick six right away in a game, you know, that's just not how you want to get it started. But then the Colts did what they should have done, right? 6.9 yards per play, a balanced offense, 137 rush yards. They sacked Cam Ward 4 times. I do still think, and I was going back and forth with a few guys on Twitter about this, regression still looms for Daniel Jones because it can't be this good all season, right? I mean, this is like, and a lot of, I mean, he deserves a lot of credit, but I think it's just a really good match. You know, he's really comfortable there. Now he's confident. Probably the type of coach who he can just talk to more about what he's doing. Like, I don't, you know, I'm more and more thinking that Brian Daboll is not very good at what he does. But ultimately, as sure as Michael Myers appears on Halloween night, Daniel Jones is going to regress somewhat, right? He's not Peyton Manning. He's not Dan Marino, I promise. So there's going to be a little bit of regression, but that doesn't mean this isn't going to be a really good football team. So, you know, all good for the Colts. Titans, just too many mistakes. And what are you going to say? You know, I think they're a team that will get better. Apparently the, you know, coach is not worried about his job at this point. I don't think he has to be yet either, but Colts are doing what they are supposed to do. Much bigger challenge in week four for Indy. We'll get to that in a second, actually later at the end of the show. Pittsburgh at New England. I need to rewatch this game in full, but this is bad news for the Patriots. That's my thesis statement. Bad news because you cannot lose this game, right? You're at home. You dominated in total yardage, 396 to 203, 26 to 14 in first downs. Like, this is a game where the Patriots were moving the ball, should have won. But in typical Pittsburgh Steelers fashion, their defense doesn't always have the best stats as far as limiting teams. But the Patriots, four lost fumbles, one interception. They took five sacks. Mike Vrabel in this Patriots administration needs to take a look at themselves now and really say, okay, this is more than just a culture change. Like, Vrabel's there, former Patriot, all good in the hood. Like, we're on the up and up. No, you're not, because this is still a very mistake-prone, clumsy operation out there. And this is more of who Pittsburgh is, right? This was an ugly win. Like, if anything, I thought less of the Steelers after this, because nothing is coming easy for Aaron Rodgers. He's legitimately a below-average quarterback in the NFL right now. 23rd in QBR, 586 yards, 6.8 yards per pass. It's fine. It's average. It's underwhelming. And I think it's going to continue to be that way for Pittsburgh, because they don't have much of an offensive line. Like, Aaron Rodgers, who loves to talk about his expertise on many different aspects of life that he, in actuality, has no expertise on, is supposed to be a really bright guy. Like, did he think it's not a very bright move to go to an offense like Pittsburgh, where you don't get good protection, they don't have a good offensive line, and now you're getting battered, right? Like, the offense looks clunky, shocker. But their defense made plays. Patriots also made a lot of mistakes. But I do think between these two teams, if any team's going to improve, it's going to be the Patriots. They're young, they're talented, especially on defense. I don't think Drake May is a bad quarterback, but he just needs to learn. We kind of know what we get from the Steelers, though, don't we? Like, these are the kind of games they win. Like, I was thinking about taking them in Circa this week, because it's just one of those games where they figure it out. And it doesn't mean they're a great team. But it's Mike Tomlin. It's playmaking. It's just enough on offense. But if you're the Patriots, you can't – if you're supposed to be a team that's on the up and up and you're, like, a better team now, you can't lose that game at home. The Steelers haven't showed anything. Jets at the Bucks. Thesis statement is, this is the luckiest cover of the week, and I bet on the Jets. So this was where I got a little positive regression here. We were due, that's for sure, after the first 2 weeks, but I'll take it. Jets stepping up at the very end, you know, blocked field goal for a touchdown. That was amazing. I certainly loved it because I knew that I would cover at that point. But game-wise, you know, the Bucks just find a way. Even when things go wrong, they find a way. This is a team that I have the most money on in my future bets, so I'm loving that now. I also love that Baker took it personal against Steve Wilkes, the Jets defensive coordinator, who previously let him go, you know, didn't treat him very well, and the Panthers had him playing, like, defense on practices and stuff. Very weird. But Baker's just doing a lot of good things as a leader. Like, he's involved in the community. He's using motivational things to amp up him and his team. You know, I've been on a roller coaster with Baker, if you paid attention to my shows in the past. I was excited to see him coming into the NFL at first. I thought there was just something to him. He had an edge. He had some moxie. He, you know, good, solid arm. So I saw something there. And then I was annoyed by Baker at Cleveland, because all of a sudden he's all over commercials and stuff, and he wasn't very good, you know, nothing about Baker was being maximized in Cleveland. But now I love him again in Tampa Bay. I mean, he is such a good fit for this team. And obviously with the cadre of wide receivers they have, I guess maybe it's hard not to be. But Baker in Tampa is legit. This team is now playing better defense, which is one of the bigger differences that we're seeing from the Bucs. They can get to the quarterback. They've always been solid in the run game, but now they're really disrupting the passing game too. Of course, this is the Jets, but they sacked Tyrod Taylor four times, only allowed 267 yards. That's what they should do against a team like the Jets. And the Jets were motivated, right? 0-2 coming into this one, hung around. Bucks still pull it out. You know, I like their effort in this game, but they're just not on the same level as most teams. Again, I've always thought that, you know, I wasn't sure that Aaron Glenn really was ready to be a head coach. I think he's a good enough leader, but his style of leadership might not work with every team, especially now when they're going to be 0-3. Like, is he just going to yell at everybody all week? He's very intense. So don't really feel much good things about the Jets right now. Defense and special teams hung around. And, you know, the thing for the Bucs, the big news, right, is Mike Evans comes away with a little injury, out a few weeks probably, but it doesn't matter as much for the Bucs because they have these wide receivers, their depth at the receiver position is just unbelievable. Like, they'll be fine. Of course, they'll miss him, but they'll be fine. Las Vegas Raiders at the Washington Commanders. Thesis statement is the Raiders are not a good football team. And I gave them a chance because it's Pete Carroll and Geno Smith. It's a good marriage. That matters most to me and my power ratings and how the coach and quarterback interact and are in sync and can, you know, lead the team, right? It kind of enculturates the entire team in a positive way when that marriage is good. But you can't show up after getting your ass kicked against the Chargers and then you get your ass kicked again by a backup quarterback-led team in the Commanders. And I know it was at D.C., you know, Commanders also coming off a loss. There was a lot of special teams problems in this one. I think Washington scored 14 points on special teams. That's obviously a part of it. And I'm not saying that the Raiders are done, but I see a real lack of effort there. We've seen that now a few times in some of their players on the field. Geno Smith just looks lost. He can't separate from a pass rush. There's no one open downfield. So maybe Pete Carroll is over his head at this point. The Commanders did what they should have done. Marcus Mariota actually gave the Raiders an early opportunity with a fumble, but the Raiders just didn't take advantage. You know, and the Commanders had a different energy coming into this game too. So Commanders, solid team, didn't learn as much about them, but I learned that the Raiders are far from a solid team at this point. All right, Rams, Philly, let me take a sip before this one. Oh, boy. I was celebrating the Eagles' demise halfway through this game, but my thesis statement in this one, and I'm sure there's a few Twitter fools who are going to enjoy this, but I got to stop talking shit about the Eagles. I get a little too excited when they don't do well. And, you know, to me, it's like a real balanced football team like the Rams were clearly the better team. Like halfway through that game, three quarters through that game, even though the scoring slowed down for the Rams, I was like, just the way they moved the ball. You know, they won the total yardage, 356 to 288 easily. I was like, this is the better team, clearly. And they still were for the majority of the game. But the Eagles just know how to win. And certainly their second half defense was impressive. And that's what I said in my videos last week, by the way. Like, I didn't bet this game. I like the Rams, but I didn't bet the Rams because of this magical secret thing that the Eagles have going on, just as an organization, how in sync they are. They're just always on the same page. They've accepted and embraced Jalen Hurts and his on-field leadership. They've accepted and embraced the coaching leadership, even though Nick Sirianni is kind of a little cringe and, you know, there's been some turnover there for sure. The team is buying in to what they have and they still have so many dogs on that team and the effort is there. The monsters are there on both sides of the front. So they just figure it out. And again, you get this team on a 2nd-and-1, 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1. It's already over, you know, like maybe they do ban the tush push next year, because it does look like those linemen are getting off the line of scrimmage awfully quick, a little too quick. probably some penalties should be assessed on some of those plays, but they're unstoppable when it's third and one, fourth and one. Like, you're not going to stop this team twice. You're probably not going to stop them once in those situations. I still came away positive about the Rams. I mean, just a tough loss. They still probably should have won the game. You know, blocked field goal at the end isn't exactly, like, that's the annoying thing about Eagles, right? Eagles fans, they're like, oh, yeah, what a win. We should have won, I guess. You know, the Rams moved the ball when they had to, and they were in scoring range, so probably should have won. But there's a few blocked field goals on Sunday, so it is what it is. I'll stop talking about this game, but I'm probably going to talk less shit about the Eagles. I think the less shit I talk, probably the worse they'll do, right? That's the mentality. Okay. Giants fandom coming out. Falcons at the Panthers. This was the epitome of an 0-2 team that figured something out, knew that they had to turn their own luck around, and they did that. The effort was there. We talked about it in the lead up to this game, and I wish I bet on Carolina, but Atlanta was just deflated when they came in. As clumsy as I've seen a team after a very, very good showing of week two. And this is a, you know, I talk about intangibles. I talk about the way that I assess these games differently than other handicappers. This is the premier example of that. This is the premier example of psychology in pro sports. It's not that it's impossible, but it's really, really tough to create the same urgent energy every single week. And the Falcons had that energy in weeks one and week two. Easily could have won week one, came up and showed up and dominated week two at Minnesota. Completely different energy in week three, and you saw it right away. You saw the difference from the Panthers. It's the reason why I certainly didn't take the Falcons in Survivor. A lot of people lost because of that. Just a trap game is what it felt like all over the place. Carolina showed better results at the end of their week two game, and here they are. I don't necessarily think that the Panthers are like a good team now. I think they have a better recipe, playing better defense, and a lot more Bryce Young controlling the game. I think that's good. Put the ball in his hands. I think he's ready for it. He's starting to prove that. Still wasn't very impressive statistically. Like, Falcons still got more yards, but the Falcons also didn't get over the 30-yard line of the Carolina Panthers in this contest. Just things kept going wrong, and obviously a lot of mistakes, turnovers, but different energy, and you have to at least consider these things before these games. Like, these letdown spots are real things. And then we see a team like Carolina and the Jets both cover, not by happenstance, not by coincidence. Green Bay at Cleveland. Shout out. This is my thesis statement. Shout out to the listeners of WTAM 1100 Cleveland iHeart Sports Radio. How about them Browns? I'm on that radio spot every week, 11:05 a.m., Cleveland iHeart Sports. How about them Browns? Because the Browns, they just hang around. I mean, the Packers had 230 yards in this game. The Browns had 221, okay? So the Browns' defense limited the Packers all game. It's only 10-0, even entering the fourth quarter. Finally, the Browns figure something out. They got their run game going. Kinshon Junkins is a good runner, 5.2 yards per carry, 94 yards total. Defense sacked Jordan Love in a good offensive line 5 times. Only 2 sacks on Flacco, by the way. So the good version of the Cleveland Browns offensive line showed up, and Jack Conklin wasn't even there, by the way. Still much better protection of Flacco, a guy who can barely move. And perhaps the Browns took it personal, all the talk about Green Bay's defense, I don't know. But, you know, if the Browns had a really talented quarterback, and then they probably need a dominant wide receiver too, but they'd be pretty damn good, I think. This is a really good defense, and it's proven itself. Came into it the number one total defense entering week three. They will probably remain that. I need to check the stats, but you know, the Browns are going to be feisty. I think they'll be better at home. You know, we saw that in week two. It is the Ravens they face, but I think they'll be better at home. But finally, lastly, let's calm down about the Packers, shall we? I mean, still a very good team, but not omnipotent. Bengals at the Vikings. My thesis statement is, I told you so. I think I had my customers befuddled a little bit with this one. I took Minnesota right away when it was Minnesota -5.5. Obviously, that went down to -3, so it looked stupid. But I loved this matchup for the Vikings. An aggressive defense against Jake Browning. Browning is bad under pressure. Do not forget that. when this guy is being pressured, rushed, nearly sacked, he throws picks. And if you're the Bengals and you're part of a game like this, like your offensive line is clearly terrible, your running game is mediocre, your defense has one or two big plays a game, it's bad. Like, I'd worry about the Zach Taylor position. You know, like, I don't know if he's going to be head coach of this team much longer if this continues. If you're a Bengals fan, maybe you want that. I've heard a lot of good things about Zach Taylor, but maybe you want him gone at this point. And Cincinnati is rolling into a very similar scenario next week. I also told you so that Carson Wentz would be an upgrade for the Vikings. Was clinical, operational, professional. That's really all the Vikings need at quarterback, and this is a much better team. Texans at the Jaguars. Man, oh man, you talk about a sloppy, gross, bad watch. Holy shit. This was about as bad of a watch as it gets. The Texans are in trouble, right? I mean, the thesis statement on this game is the changing of the guard in the AFC South is official. Texans are 0-3, Colts 3-0, Jacksonville's 2-1. So Houston's in real shit at this point. I got to watch this. I got to rewatch this tape too, but it was weird to see that the Jacksonville Jaguars felt like the better, more strategic program, like more buttoned up operation at the end especially. But throughout the game, really, Trevor Lawrence still had a bonehead play, really dumb interception towards the end of the game. Like, he makes mistakes that are like things that a rookie quarterback do. Like, he is an average quarterback at this point. There's no doubt about it. And largely, this was a sloppy game from both sides of the ball. Like, I didn't leave feeling great about Jacksonville. But Houston, extremely anemic on offense at times. Both offenses kind of looked out of sync. But the new offensive coordinator and bad offensive line combination in Houston is not working out. Shocker. So I will rewatch this one again. I'm not really looking forward to it. I think it was a pretty shitty game for what I could, from what I caught. But man, trouble in Houston, which I didn't think we'd be saying at this point in the season. I thought they would at least be 1-2, 0-3. Whew. Denver never really wanted to win the game and still couldn't. Let's move on to the Broncos and Chargers. That's my thesis statement. Denver really wanted this game. You could see the energy was there. They were intense. They wanted this game bad, and they still couldn't, which speaks to the direction of the LA Chargers. No team believes in their coach more than the Chargers. Herbert still doesn't put enough touch on some passes downfield, but his arm strength is phenomenal. His confidence is higher than ever. Just making plays. Arguably one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback, pure quarterback, throwing quarterback in the NFL right now. The run game did enough. 376 total yards for the Bolts against a really good defense. 29-9 in first down disparity. Denver just didn't do enough offensively. 2-for-13 on third downs were the Broncos and Bo Nix. Yikes. Gross. Defense played hard, but was underwhelming in spots too. Just superior coaching, superiorly executed game plan by the Bolts. The Broncos were kind of still there at the end because of a turnover that they took advantage of or something, but clearly the better team was the Chargers, and they covered that one too. It was -2.5 in most books. Cardinals at the 49ers. My thesis statement here is the 49ers are making sure their season isn't like last year, and they're doing it right. Robert Saleh, I've talked about him and his effect on this defense. He's happy there. This is the role that was meant for him. Defense made huge plays when it mattered, even when Nick Bosa was out of this game, right? Like, Bosa leaves, I think, in the second quarter, or I believe it was the first half. Niners still nearly 100 more yards than Arizona, 355 to 260, despite losing the turnover battle. Mac Jones made the plays when he had to. Brock Purdy is going to be back next week, most likely, so no worries, Mac. You did your job. Two wins, very good. This is a 49ers team now that you see the difference, too, in culture, right? Like, the 49ers have a winning culture. Arizona was healthier entering this game, like, had no excuses, still lost. Jonathan Gannon and Kyler Murray, and again, their lack of leadership throughout this team. Like, who's the leader on defense? Who's the leader on offense? Because Kyler Murray doesn't stand out as that guy. certainly doesn't like rail into his players on the sidelines. That like isn't, you know, hyping, you know, amping players up when things are going awry. So, you know, the Cardinals are going to continue being who they are, I think. I was higher on them entering the season, but I'm done feeling that way. They are who they are, very average. They'll beat the bad teams, and they will flop against the good ones. So, man, I don't know why. I mean, there is some clear evidence that the Cardinals could be a better team. They just don't step up. They just don't follow through. Saints at the Seahawks. Thesis statement is, this is what I thought it was. Saints, a no-show in the first quarter. Did better for a little bit, like, you know, started to gain some offense, but more turnovers, you know, in garbage time. They started getting more first downs and stuff. But, you know, I mean, at that point, this game was over in the first half. The Saints are just one of the worst teams in the NFL. I don't think that's going to change. I do think that the Saints offense is going to continue to be better than we think. That's what Kellen Moore does. I think he's pretty good at that. That it certainly seems like that at this point, because they're not working with much, and they're still able to produce something. But Seattle will also be very good in situations like this, beating up on bad teams, especially at home. Do they beat the NFC elites? I don't think so. And Sam Darnold just continues to be fine, but like nothing is popping off for him. Like I would take the Washington Commanders over the Seahawks all day on a neutral field. And I'm not sure if Washington is one of the elite in the NFC right now, but I would still take Washington, right? Like that's a good example of where I think the Seahawks are. But they're a good team, above average defense, and they'll likely be a good team against the spread all season. Cowboys at Bears. I didn't see a second of this game. So, to be honest, I didn't want to. So I might spare some details here. I have to rewatch the film, but from what I can tell, my thesis statement is the Cowboys just couldn't bring the same energy. 1-for-4 in the red zone. This is bad. I mean, this is a bad, bad indictment on this on this Dallas defense, because you just let the Giants put up 37, 450 yards from Russell Wilson, over 500 yards of offense in week two. Then you go to Chicago. Now, all of a sudden, Caleb Williams, 4 touchdowns, looking smooth, 31 points for the Bears. I mean, Matt Eberflus, who this was his revenge spot against the Bears. I think he's just a bad coach, like a really bad coach. And he's making no impact on this defense. Dallas defense might be the worst in the NFL right there with the Bengals. Like, I think Dallas just cared more about their week one match against Philly. But then the Giants in week two, now the Bears in week three. This is a really, really bad defense. It's also still hard to feel good about Chicago, because like we shouldn't feel good about the Giants after week two either, right? And their defense still allowed 396 yards and 23 first downs, which outpaced the Bears. So I don't know. Maybe more to say later in this week. Maybe not. I can't imagine I'm going to enjoy watching this film either. Didn't leave feeling better about either team, but wow, that Dallas defense, not good. Finally, Kansas City at the Jets. My thesis statement is the Giants are not a good offense, especially with Russell Wilson in week two at Dallas. Didn't change that. Cam Scatabo is a fun guy. I think Jackson Dart would be fun. I think that's what the Giants need. They need energy. They have not had energy in their offense for 10 years. Like, if I'm Daboll and I'm trying to save my job, I'm moving on from Russell Wilson ASAP. Defensively, they're above average still in many ways. Like, they hang around in games, but they're not good enough to hold back a great quarterback. We saw that against Jaden Daniels. We've seen it against Dak Prescott, of course, against Jalen Hurts, and we saw it against Patrick Mahomes last night, just making too many plays. And the Chiefs were still underwhelming, right? Their offense was underwhelming. I loved when Andy Reid checked Travis Kelce on the sideline. Like, I love when he does shit like that. Big A with a big shoulder right into Kelce. I mean, he treats them like, you know, they're his, like, little sons. It's awesome. But Travis Kelce not doing much of anything lately. Wide receivers looked out of sync. I mean, Patrick Mahomes throws a pass behind the line of scrimmage or behind him. It's a fumble. You know, there were drops, overthrows. The Kansas City defense saved the day again. They shut down Malik Nabers. But it's going to be a slog for Kansas City. Like, that's not going to be an easy road all season until they get more guys back. Xavier Worthy needs to come back. Rashee Rice needs to come back. Although it was kind of gross that the Chiefs were wearing those shirts. Like, free Rashee? Like, the guy injured a bunch of people when he was driving. What are you talking about? But it's clearly not the same Chiefs team, right? Like, you beat the Giants, and you probably shouldn't have covered that game. So it's the Chiefs are above average because of Patrick Mahomes, and that's about it. And a good defense. But, man, their offense is missing its explosivity. That's not a word. Explosiveness. Okay. Full recap of week three, all of our thesis statements. Let's get to a very quick recap of every week four line and just kind of what I think about it, my gut reactions to all these. Seahawks at the Cardinals, Thursday night football. Really, really tough game. I'm probably not going to have a bet on that one. I think those teams are pretty even. Short week doesn't help. Probably doesn't help the Seahawks the most because they have to go on the road. Right. And now the Cardinals want to win. Minnesota at Pittsburgh. This one's in Dublin, so it's not really at Pittsburgh. Minnesota's -1.5 to -2. I think that's wrong. I think this is a bad spot for the Vikings. As well as they did in week three, Pittsburgh is the kind of defense and team that can really just throw everything about that operation off. So I don't know about that one either. I think maybe you consider a teaser on the Steelers. Buffalo is a 16.5 point favorite at home against the Saints. I'll just say this. I will not be picking that in Survivor because everybody else will. And there's still a chance, right? It's a very desperate Saints team. Tennessee at Houston. Who's going to bet on Houston as a 7-point favorite? 7 to 7.5 point favorite. But can you bet on Tennessee now either? That's probably a very low scoring game as the total indicates. Let me just bring it up here. I believe it's 39.5. I don't think that's going up. Cleveland at Detroit. I think Cleveland is getting a lot of disrespect here. I don't think it should be 8.5. I know Detroit's at home, but the Cleveland defense is very legit. And Detroit's defense, I'm not sure how good it is. Washington at Atlanta. This should be a very entertaining game. I expect maybe a higher scoring game here. Makes sense that Washington is favored. Jaden Daniels should be back. Kind of saw the worst of Atlanta last week. But if I'm Atlanta after getting blown out in week three by the Carolina Panthers and you're going back home, it's probably a good spot to take Atlanta in like a teaser or something, right? You're probably going to keep it close after that embarrassing loss. The Eagles at the Bucks. Bucks +3. Which I think is kind of disrespectful. The Bucs, you can make an argument, are the better team through 3 weeks than the Eagles. Although, again, I'm not going to talk shit about the Eagles because they find ways to win. But the Bucs have beaten this Eagles team before in the playoffs 2 years ago. And that was a Bucs team that wasn't as good as this one. Panthers at the Patriots. Gross. This is up to 5.5 in favor of the Patriots. I don't know if I can accept that. Don't think that the Patriots should be commanding that kind of spread anywhere. Chargers at the Giants. The only reason why this isn't higher on the Chargers is because I think, like, I saw some sports books did not have this game up in their slate yet. I think part of that might be because odds makers and bettors are wondering and expecting Jackson Dart to possibly make his first start in week four. As a Giants fan, I would love that just to see some fucking change. Excuse my language. Jacksonville at San Francisco. San Francisco -3 to -3.5, -3.5 in most books here. Could only look San Francisco's way. Indy at the Rams. Rams -3.5. Colts 3-0 Colts getting the underdog treatment. Is this a really smart spread from odds makers and bettors out there expecting the Rams to recover after that loss? Or are they all dumb for not trusting in the Colts to hang in against a really good team? I tend to think it's the former. Chicago at the Raiders. Gross. Raiders are 1-point favorites. Wait, are you kidding me? Next. Baltimore at Kansas City. Kansas City 2.5-point underdogs at home. Of course, it is the Ravens. But when's the last time you've seen that? Green Bay at Dallas. Green Bay 6-point favorites to 6.5-point at some books on the road. Good response game for the Packers, who probably should dominate a team in Dallas who looks really floppy and clumsy right now. And hey, the Micah Parsons revenge game, of course. Jets at Miami in a doubleheader on Monday night. Miami's -3 to -2.5. Gross, ugly. Don't know if I can trust either team. Bengals at the Broncos. This is the Bengals situation in week 3, part 2. And now Denver lost. Denver really wants to win this game. It's going to be a lot of survivors on Denver. All right, everybody. We went 35 minutes on this one. Try to be a little shorter next time. Catch me. I'm going to introduce a new show either this week or next week where I evaluate the week 4 lines in a deeper way, maybe introduce some new concepts and new segments on that show. And then, of course, we have our week 4 analysis and leans at the end of the week as well. Check me out at Farley Betts on X, farleybets.substack.com. See you next time.